Unpacking Chrysalis, the art of being human.
Oh, hey, Clayton. How's it going today?
Hey, Benny. Pretty sweet. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I think I'm going to Disneyland tomorrow. Check that. I am going to Disneyland tomorrow.
Man, that is bonkers. Disneyland on a Wednesday? Okay.
That's how you get in there for a good deal. Hey, what's going on in your world?
Well, I had a great chat with Amber, cybersecurity dude in our companies. And man, this guy just gets so energized by what he's doing. And I just love how it's lined up with like his worldview. This is, matters to him and he's doing it. He's getting energy from it. It was quite a fascinating conversation. I just didn't expect to see somebody so cleanly aligned with you know, their personal belief system, their values, their principles, and finding it at work and just getting and giving energy. It was pretty fascinating to see.
And I was really excited to see that this wasn't an episode about monthly cybersecurity training, which when you see the title, you might think that, but it isn't. It's actually full of a lot of wonderful stories. And I know you and I talked prior to this because surprise, surprise, we talked before we do the recording. And there was a key moment that he shared. Yeah. And I think it's worth prefacing the podcast with that moment. Do you remember what that moment was?
I do. You know, this is just indicative of these random moments that happen when you're around other people that I really love. So Amer just told a little story about how he was, his uncle mentioned to him, when you're at work, treat it and protect it like your family. And that just deeply impacted Amer. And he does that. So you can see, so when we get these, you know, these monthly cybersecurity things, there's just like a real deeply rooted reason why this matters to this person. And it really gives him the fuel. And just this random little interaction with his uncle that deeply affected the way he lives his life.
Well, instead of us talking about it, why don't we let him talk about it and we'll catch everyone on the other side.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right, dude. I'm just going to ask you 5 questions. And you can just answer whatever comes to mind. And these are simple questions like coffee or tea or, you know, beach or mountains, these sorts of things. So let me ask you a few of these. You ready to roll?
Yep.
All right. Amber Gill on the 5 questions. Hey, what's your, do you prefer books or movies?
Movies.
Do you prefer being spontaneous or are you a planner?
Absolutely spontaneous.
Make it up.
Yeah. Introvert. I love the challenge.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Beach or mountains?
I would say beach for sure.
Yeah. Cats or dogs?
Oh, I'm allergic to both. But
oh, good.
If I was to pick, I would say cats.
What's your favorite season?
Oh, summer. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
Hey there. Welcome to the podcast. Unpacking Chrysalis is a podcast meant to build community in our companies by getting to know some of the amazing people that we have around us that we're working with. So today we're chatting with Amer, who's going to help us understand cybersecurity, which honestly, you know, traditionally I think has been a bit of a dry topic for the everyday person. But in recent years, this seems to have really changed into much more of a ground level problem for everyday people, especially at work. But I feel like it's even getting into my private life somehow. So we're going to trying to explore this stuff with Amer, who spends his time really professionally understanding cybersecurity and the impacts and how to help people like me be a little bit more safe. So we're going to try to get to know this topic a little bit more thoroughly through this chat with Amer. Hey, Amer, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for making a bit of time to chat.
Well, thank you, Clayton. I really appreciate you having me here.
Hey, maybe to start off, Amer, how would you just describe yourself, your work here, how long you've been here, what team you work on, what you do?
Yeah, so I've been here for about 2 years. I do consider myself a software developer. I have a great passion for software development, but my current role is security lead in staff software developer for enterprise architecture. So I still have that in my title officially. Yeah. So I've been here again for 2 years and I pretty much, you know, manage the security program here, really focusing on application security and platform security. So that's what I do.
Wow. So I actually didn't know that you are a software developer, but you've kind of turn towards cybersecurity. What's the relationship there?
Well, I've been doing application or software development for, 18 years of my career. You know, just in the last 3 years, I've always had a security mindset as a programmer. But in the last couple of years, I try to shift over slightly and bring some experience to the new generation. As we get older in our career, mature in our career, we try to find more exciting things to do. And I still do it a lot. Like I'll be honest with you, I still after work, I'll grab my computer and just come up with ideas and just develop. Yeah. I find a lot of ease and comfort just within myself just to develop code. I don't know what it is. It just brings a great piece of serenity and peace to me. Yeah. And it's just one of those things that I just love doing and continue to do. People always ask me, are you going to retire 65? I don't think I'll ever retire from application development. I see myself coding at like age 80. Like I've just got a real great passion for developing ideas, right? I mean, it's one thing. I think it's great coming up with ideas, but having the ability to execute on that is a gift itself, right? So a lot of entrepreneurs have ideas, but then they got to go hire programmers to execute. I have the ability to like just sit there, come up with an idea and say, hey, I'm just gonna try to do things. So
I've always admired and not been jealous, but noticed that there's a real gap between my ability to execute an idea and then what a software developer can do. Like there's just a bit of wizardry there, magic, real creativity, art, and of course all the logic and pragmatic part of it. But that's what I've really noticed about software developers is that just this outsized ability to just to make a difference and to actually make something out of an idea. It's quite wild.
You're absolutely right. You tap into both just the logical aspects of things, but then there's also this massive creative thing. So it's like left, right brain interacting together. Yeah. It's a marvelous thing, to be honest with you. So that's why I think it's I love it and I'm passionate about it.
I also just want to focus in a little bit on this. What a wonderful treat that you've given yourself in your life to be able to find something that allows you to get into this flow state or mindfulness or presence or whatever it is, however a person describes it. But that is something that we all seek. That's why we have hobbies. That's why we have pastimes and interests. And some of us just never get there where we get into this thing that just brings us into the moment and for extended periods of time. So I guess congratulations to you for finding something in life that does that, because it is great for the spirit and the mental health and all that stuff.
No, you're absolutely right. It is really a blessing that, sometimes I just stare and think, man, this is amazing. And I've been doing this for, 20 years, 18 years, 20 years of my career. And I sometimes just look out of the window and just say, what a blessing this is, right? Yeah. Like I'm doing exactly what I want to do. So it's awesome. Yeah.
If we were to zoom out a little bit and think about just like cybersecurity, probably what the average person thinks about it, what are we actually at the big top level? What are we talking about? And I guess we'll start there. Can we start there? What are we talking about?
Well, we're really talking about, individuals, whether or not they're, cyber criminals, whether or not they're state-sponsored actors, insiders, organized crime groups, or even terrorist groups trying to access systems for financial gain, espionage. They want to sabotage or disrupt systems. They want to hold things in ransom, political discord. Minor things like thrill seeking. Kids acting out instead of in the playground, acting out on the cyberspace. So that's what we're really looking at, is to protect systems in a way where, I like to think I've got these architectural principles in security, and one of the main ones is data is our crown jewel, right? So that's one of our principles that we have, is that data, we have to protect it at the core of everything that I personally do, I data is the thing that I protect the most, right? That's what my core is, to protect that. And, other people have different roles in cybersecurity where, they're preventing the perimeter from being attacked, but once, somebody does get into a system, for example, is there any type of lateral movement that can occur where, the people can get to that data? And if they get to that data, are they able to get financial gain? Are they able to cause issues within the system?
So it's a little bit of setting up the defense, but then also doing the sleuth work almost, or the detective work of figuring out what happens when or if they get past that defense. So you're playing both sides of that as a cybersecurity person. You know, one of the things that I came across recently is this quote from Adam Grant, and he was saying that in this current economy, or this current kind of zeitgeist, or the way things work now, the access to information used to be the valuable piece, right? So people who could memorize things and keep track of facts and figures and things, that those were the people that had value in kind of an economy that is we're moving away from. And in the current information rich state, almost information overwhelmed state, it's actually the people who can see patterns and connect the dots that are actually going to be able to provide the most value. And that's a skill that actually has a lot of effect on the way things are now, since we're in a real high information environments all the time. Does that mean anything to you when I say that?
Oh, absolutely. And I completely agree with you. And I think the age of AI is really, really helping with that, where, do I really need to memorize it all, or can I leverage, some tools that can put information in a context that I want quickly? I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. we need to validate it and make sure there's no hallucinations occurring with it. But, I think that the information age and the ability to get information so quickly has definitely changed in the AI age, for sure.
Yeah.
And I actually see great value in it, as long as the information is coming from trusted sources. As long as you're able to validate the information and it's coming from trusted sources, then there's great value in that, for sure.
Again, there's a mindset there of healthy skepticism, or critical thinking is kind of the word that is kind of overused these days. But that is, I think, what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's always this element of risk and reward, right? But I'm a programmer. I think we push technology. I'm not afraid of AI, I'll be honest with you. You look at it, you assess the risks around it, and you build controls around it. I mean, the world itself is risk and reward. So, when AI, some of the things that people fear the most, as long as we're able to assess it and come up with a way to mitigate the their concerns, I think we can move forward, definitely. And I think that's changing. You have a whole new industry around that. The other day I was on Cloudflare. It's just a proxy thing, and they have built-in scanners where you can see OpenAI, for example, scanning your website for information, like the AI models scanning your website for information. So a whole new industry is just coming about because of this. And I think it's absolutely exciting, to be honest.
Yeah. How did, am I right in saying that, I think, again, for the normies, it seems like cybersecurity was something that other people had to worry about and companies had to worry about. Governments had to worry about, but not me. Did that used to be the way it was? And has that changed?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, going back to the architectural principles that we have defined, another one that we have is security is everybody's responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you got to create a cultural mindset that everybody involved within the organization is there to protect the data. So I think it is everybody's responsibility, and you just have to continue to spread that and that type of information. Yeah. So definitely, I think, it is changing. Culturally, everybody's becoming a lot more aware of it, which is good.
How did it turn from something that the network people had to worry about to something that I have to worry about. It used to be just network people, right? Like set up the network, keep it tight, put a NAT box on it or something simple, like, you know, and there's your security.
The whole notion of like shifting left, where the word continuous emerged, is amazing, because like, let's think about our lives. If we are able to reflect on, let's say that once a year we do a reflection of ourselves, right? And we only do that once a year. That means we build up all of this stuff, and then right at the end of the year, we reflect. Whereas continuous, like if I'm doing a daily reflection of who I am today, was, you know, did I match my principles that I've set out? If I reflect on that daily, I'm always bettering myself on a daily basis. Whereas I think so. If we apply that to cybersecurity, it's the same, right? Everything shift left. It's everybody's responsibility. We're able to capture things early, and that's another thing. There's some pricing models that have been shown, which shows that the effect of a cybersecurity data breach at the end of a cycle is so much more costly than finding something early within the cycle, right? So something early within the cycle may cost you 2 or 3 hours, whereas when it's full board production, there's a heavy reliance on it. The effect of that is a very heavy cost. So from a risk perspective, managing cost optimization to find it early makes a lot more sense than later. Yeah.
And that's all of us. That's all of us doing the diligence. People like you having a good program to introduce us to these things, and then us actually doing the diligence.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How did it evolve over time from, you know, set up a NAT box, have a security, have security as a side of desk to the network people, you know, 20 years ago to now it's a thing that I have to deal with, like as a, just a simple user on the network. What's happening? What do you call them? Hackers? Attackers? What do you call these?
Threat actors. I use the word threat actors. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what are threat actors doing differently that makes it that I have to get in there and take care of my stuff versus just let the network people take care of it like it was a few decades ago?
Well, I think, again, if we bring it back, like the analogy that I want to use is a sporting analogy. So when you're playing a pickup, a pickup game of soccer, right? It's you're just playing with your friends, you're knocking the ball around, you may come up with, you know, a play pattern that, you know, if you've played soccer with somebody for a couple of years, you might have a play pattern with them, but, you know, it's very reactive. It's very reactive. Whereas you look at a professional soccer game where they have models of play, right? We're in possession of the ball, when we're out of possession of the ball, when we're transitioning into possession, when we're transitioning out of possession, there's a concrete model around it. So I think what's happened in cybersecurity now is that, you know, it's not reactive no more, right? It's more of a proactive approach where we have maturity around it, a strategic plan around it. So what we want to do is develop the same type of strategy around cybersecurity to ensure that, you know, we're effectively measuring it. We're not just throwing dollars at it. Again, reactive, we just throw dollars at things, and people exploit our fear. Hey, you know, vendors will exploit that fear and say, hey, you need this, you need this, you need this. But now that we measure it, and that's one of the things that I really wanted to talk about, is that when it comes to, you know, our security program, we really use something called software assurance model, where we manage the software development life cycle in five different categories, which is governance, design, implementation, verification, operations. But we're applying a strategic model to it and a maturity plan towards it to achieve what we need to do. So we are in control of the program rather than being in control of it being in control of us, right? So hopefully I answered your question there.
Yeah, that's a fascinating take. I don't know what I thought was happening in your part of the world, but that's impressive. That level of sophistication, the granularity, the detail, the models that you use to think your way through your work. That's fascinating.
And I think that's, you know, that might come from the programming part of my brain is to make sure mm-hmm. that things are well organized. You know, like if I was to create a video game, for example, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And the threat actor is one of the characters in the video game. How would I code that person, right? That's exactly what we try right. to do, is to think about it logically in that sense, rather than just, again, just being very reactive to things, because at the end of the day, we have to have a responsibility to the business to ensure that, you know, the costs are managed correctly. You know, we're not over investing in certain cybersecurity measures that really don't affect our business and wasting money right. there. And having this false sense of security, that's a big thing too, is that, yeah. you know, you may buy $1 million product, but you know, it's not implemented correctly, or it's not really yeah. doing what it needs to be. And then you have this false sense of security, and with that false sense of security, you think you're protected, which may not be the case, right?
What do you find fascinating about this work that you're doing?
I feel a real responsibility, you know, that we have people's trust. And when we have somebody's trust, our clients, our employees, everybody around us, that we need to protect that trust and maintain that trust. So there's quite a responsibility there. And I love it. I think it fulfills me. We had a hackathon happen recently, and I was just in there. I was like, dream up the thing that, like, the project that I wanted to work was dream up something that, like, nobody can do.
Right.
That's what I want to be involved in, right? Like, I want to be involved wow. in things that, you know, that are impossible, right? Like, yeah. absolutely impossible, and figure out ways. Because I firmly believe everything has a solution, right? I believe that. I think we can find solutions for everything. We may need to pivot a little bit here and there, and but I think there are solutions for everything. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that, and how I might have got slightly distracted by
I just asked you what you find fascinating, and you just opened up this wonderful insight into just how much this matters to you personally, gives you energy. It's something that makes you proud. Like, it really hits at your values. And I also think, you know, with this, you know, at IQmetrics, the company purpose is to create great experiences. This is part of that, deeply part of that. Like, you have an opportunity to create great experiences, but it's really hidden almost, except for the little things that, like, the training stuff and the little things that you send out to notify people, hey, do this or update the password. But it seems like the rest of the work, this great experience that you're creating, is really hidden. Is that something that you notice?
You know, changing culture, like, it's fascinating, because changing culture and being and using a stick to do it is one thing, you know, and then changing culture within the great principles, like the corporate principles that we have here, where we strive for, you know, lifestyle, right? Like the Ellen Slice, right? Like, we have to be respectful to people. We have to understand what they're going through, so they can grow as a human being, rather than just looking at this individual, you know, like they're incompetent, right? And they're not good enough, and killing them on it. Where I feel like it's not of that. It's none of that. It's just, you know, we find a way within our corporate values to create the best experience that we can for, especially for our employees. And that's what I love about working here, to be honest with you, is that it's not this top down approach. You do this, you do that, but a way that we can do it together. Like, the we in this is so important to me, because it's not, you know, just, you do it, I do it. We do it together, and we create this great experience together. So I love that part of the of being here, to be honest with you. It's energetic. It's not like after a hard day's work, you don't have any energy. I find I have more energy at 5 o'clock than I ever used to before, right?
That's amazing.
Except when I'm doing compliance reporting. I just want to put that in there.
Little caveat there. Yeah. Compliance reporting is a drag on the energy. Necessary.
Yeah, that's a drag on the energy.
It is pretty wild when you can be involved in some work that gives you energy. That's like the big dream, right? That's
That is the
that's
dream.
that's almost the real holy grail of finding work, or engaging in a profession where you go to work on a typically, I think, people often and certainly here too. I mean, it's not panacea, but you go to work and you rest up from the weekend, and then you go to work, and each day you kind of drain your battery a bit, and then you rest up on the weekend again. But there are definitely opportunities where you go into work and you actually get energy from what you're doing, who you're interacting with, the types of problems you're solving. And it just depends on, I guess, how it aligns with your values, your personal values. But I can tell you that years ago, Christopher, our founder, that's one of the things he used to say, Clayton, what if we could create a company that gave people energy? And that always just blew me away as an intention of a company about people. Another friend of mine says, Clayton, capitalism isn't about making the world a better place. And I don't disagree with that. I'd strongly agree with that. And if he's listening, he'll know who he is. But I do think, though, in the process of doing the work, creating a company that engages in a capitalist system, the experience in that company can be more human and more aligned with people's values, and can strive at least for creating energy for people. And I just find that that's quite wonderful that you've tapped into that a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. It's the outcomes can still be the same, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for a company that has a very top-down approach, or to a company that is very willing to have community, to have character, to have speed and agility, like we do, our outcomes can be exactly the same. But at the end of the day, we go home much happier, I feel. You know what I mean? Like, there's days where there's, where we have to react a little quicker and faster, but we find ways of retrospecting on that and finding that how can we be better next time around. So I love that part. I don't think we can we need to compromise the outcomes for our own value sake and our own freedom and peace and serenity, right?
Well said. Amber, what have we not, now that you kind of know, we've had this conversation and it's evolved in the way it has, really kind of naturally. We just start with an outline and then just kind of go, we riff off of each other. But are there things that we haven't talked about that you think would be useful to share with the audience? Topics or just little quips? I don't know. What, anything on your mind right now?
No, not really. I'm going to just shout out a name. Lindsay's probably going to laugh at me for saying this, because I nag on this all the time. Just for our for anybody listening, complete your security awareness training, please.
Right.
That's all I want to put out there.
That would add energy to,
especially on Cybersecurity Month. Right. We're aiming for 100% this month, so please finish your cybersecurity training. So I don't have to nag people. That's the only one thing I really find hard about this job. I just feel like a nag, right? Like sometimes. Can you do this? Can you do this? Can you do this? It's
right.
Why
do you think it's important for them to do that security training?
I think for them.
What's the value to them?
Personally, I think it just brings greater awareness, right? Again, I think the other thing that we really haven't really touched on is fear, right? How these people exploit our inner fears to get what they want, right? And today it may be, if it's something personal within your life where, we haven't done the training. For example, I'm sure each and every viewer out there has got some kind of phishing email on their personal site that's trying to exploit their fear, or on their mobile phone that's trying to exploit their fear. So it's important to have that awareness, just internally. How many people, I see it all the time, Facebook accounts being hacked, right? So this just, if you bring it into lots your own life, you bring it into your own life to protect your own information. And then you go to work. My uncle once, my uncle told me the most amazing thing when I first started just work when I was 19 years old. He said to me, wherever you go work, you act like that place is yours, right? You, the way you would protect your own information, the way you would protect your own family, you protect those people, you act in that manner. And that's something that I've held true to this day, is that I go into work and I'm a part of it. Mm. We are a part of it. You know, it's not, you know, this is just work. Somebody else is profiting from not. No, I'm a part of that. Right. You know what I mean? So I think that was some great advice he gave me early in my career. And it's just really helped me just be sane in the moment too. Right. You know, and so I think it's fantastic.
Man, that's deep. That's a good uncle. It's amazing to have people in your life that will share with you just these little moments that actually have a deep, long-lasting impact on you. Man, that's good for you. Really. It's beautiful. Maybe just to close a little bit on the future trends of cybersecurity, what do you see going on that is curious to you or unsettling or invigorating, however you look at it?
Yeah, I think the two main ones that I'm closely watching is obviously, you know, with the AIH, how that is evolving. And again, just going back to that MITRE attack framework that I talked about earlier, MITRE has another attack framework just for AI. So there is modeling going on in the background to comprehensively look at things in a systematic way. And then the other one that I'm, you know, the other thing that I'm greatly concerned about these days is just the supply chain being tainted. That's always a big thing for me. And I believe that the European Agency on Cyber Security. I don't think I quoted their acronyms correctly there, but that's their number one threat for now. So just, you know, the supply chain being tainted again with so much open source software out there. We need to make sure that whatever gets introduced into our environment, we're managing and monitoring it. And you see that a lot in there's been a few big attacks out there. I think SolarWind was one of them where the supply chain did get tainted and, things can happen. So just looking out for those things. So those are my two big ones, supply chain and AI. But I'm excited about AI. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, me too. There's a risk there, but there's also a great opportunity. And so, I'm really trying to lean into it the best I can. The bigger picture, quite uncertain about AI, but we'll see how it plays out. Amr, man, that was really wonderful to have you on the podcast and have that conversation. I hope that was fun for you. How do you feel about that now that it's all done?
No, I had a great time. You know, I at first when you asked me months ago, I was just like, maybe. But it just happened to be October and cybersecurity was one of those things I could talk about. At first I thought, okay, we're going to talk about my personal life, this and that and that. Right. And, I was a little bit hesitant about that. But it's been great. And thank you so much. And I really enjoy these podcasts. I listen monthly to them or whenever they're published. And I have a great time getting to know everybody that speaks here. So keep doing this great work. Appreciate
sweet,
it.
Sweet feedback. Hope to you and Benny. Thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot for the feedback on that. I'm glad you enjoy it. And I know that there's lots of people out there that enjoy this podcast that you wouldn't think are part of our audience, but I do hear from them. And it's a fascinating wide spectrum of people that listen to this. So thanks for being a part of it. And I hope you have a great day, man.
Thank you. Take care.
And we're back. Usually, Clayton, I let you say what your favorite part of the podcast was first, and then I just ride your coattails. But I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to say my favorite part of this podcast was there's a point where it just gets like a little like Jason Bourne-y or maybe like Jack Ryan, where we start talking about all the threats. And it's like the sexy side of cybersecurity, which I thought was It was great. What a fun narrative that's just intertwined in there. The terrorism, espionage, bribery, and it's got all, it's a roller coaster ride, a suspense thriller. And I love that. What did you like about this episode?
You know, that was an unexpected emergence from this conversation. Like, it really did get that way. And then when you contrast that, so this person's energy and his life energy, how passionate he is about this. And then we roll our eyes when we get our monthly little, hey, watch this 2-minute video and make our company more secure. And we're just like, oh, geez, again. And this guy's out there, like you say, Jason Bourne style, just deeply aware of what actually is going on out there and how kind of fraught the world is with risk. And anyway, I thought that there's a disconnect there. I'm going to take my monthly cybersecurity thing a little bit more seriously. But, you know, honestly, as I think about this conversation, I just love how a guy has found work that gives him energy. That's the dream. You think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This guy's way up on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It just really steps into the agency and autonomy that's offered here. The affordances of this, some of the structures and the way we work in a self-organizing company really benefit this dude, and it's I love to see it.
Yeah, it's great to see. The other thing I'll add that I liked is there is a sense of community about how everyone should do their part, and you know, it makes it all better. Like it helps things progress, it helps keep us safe, and I really like that. And speaking of community, look, this podcast is sort of a community, so if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, by all means, please feel free to reach out to Clayton or myself. We'll do our best to address them. And until next time, I don't have a slogan to go here. Do you have a slogan that we can put at the end? Until next time, keep reaching for the stars. I don't know.
Keep reaching for the stars. Yeah. Don't stop reaching for the stars.
Well, with that, we'll catch you next time. Okay. Bye.
Unpacking Chrysalis, the art of being human.